We're holding on page Samach in Tainis, top line, where it starts the Gemara, middle of Ois Lamed Tes. We learned the Mishnah, or parts of the Mishnah, about the Seder Tanias, about the special order of Tfilis that they did during the last few, during the last seven fasts when they were fasting for rain, and according to some Rishonim, for other things as well. So one of the things we mentioned was that we said they would put ashes, they would take from Mikla, burnt ashes, and we said Tosfos had said that these are actually ashes from human bones, and they would place some on the they would place some on the top of the teva, on the top of the box containing the Sifrei Torah, which they would bring out to the city square, as well as on the head of the Nasi or Barosh HaNasi. But so they would put on the head of the Nasi and the head of the Abestin, the Hodu Toni. Then it continues, Kol Echad Be'echad, Note of a Nosin Beroshe. Everybody else would take some of the ashes and put them on their own heads. So the question is, why are we putting first on the Nasi and the Abestin? Why don't we start with the regular people? So the Gemara asks, Eni, is that so that we should put on the head of the Nasi first? V'hotnan, we learn v'hotnan would be a Mishnah. It's really v'hotanya. We learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer b'gdula maschilim min hagadol. When it comes to something greatness, when it comes to something of greatness of a mitzvah where there's no poronos involved, maschilim min hagadol. Then we begin with the greatest one first and work our way down to the lesser ones. Over kalkola or over klola maschilim min hakatan. When it comes to the kalkola, means something of punishment or a klala. When it comes to a curse, maschilim min hakatan, then we begin with the least important. So here we're talking about the ashes is meant as a, it has to do with the poronos. It has to do with the fasting and the davening for the lack of rain. So why are we putting ashes on the head of the nasi first? Where do we know this? Where do we know that when it comes to great things of greatness, we start with the greater one? Shanema, the pasuk says, "By Dabr Moshe al Aaron, the El Ozer, the El Isamar," in that order. On the footnote of here, it brings the Gemara brings a different. The Gemara has a different girsah. The printed Gemara has a different girsah. By Yemim Moshe al Aaron, Ula El Ozer, El Isamar. A few pasukim earlier, where he's telling them that the after Nadab and Avihu passed away, they shouldn't tear their clothes and let their hair grow long, etc. And this is the one over here in Ein Yaakov by Dabar Moshe al Aaron ve'el Ozer ve'el Isamar is telling them to take the korbanos of that day, the eighth day of the Miluyim, and eat them even though they're banims. Whatever the case, we see now. Marsha elsewhere points out this Gemara is also in Brachas. Eitz Yosef also mentions it over here. It's not just the fact that it says them in that order. It has to say them in some order, after all, and there's no reason why Aaron should be after Elazar any summer. Of course, they're going to go in that order. The Chiddush is, since it says that, since it mentions Bonav HaNesorim, his leftover children, the ones who survived after Nadav and Avihu, then we don't need to name them. We know already from earlier in Torah that Aaron had four sons, Nadav, Avihu, Elazar any summer, and that once Nadav and Avihu are gone, then the ones left are Elazar any summer. So the fact that it has to name them, the fact that it has to mention their names, shows that it has to be in that order. First, Moshe is telling Aaron, and only then Elazar and Isamar. Over kalkola, over klola, maschilim min hakatan. When it comes to kalkola, when it comes to punishment, or klola, maschilim min hakatan, there we begin with the lesser one, and we know that the Omer Mar because we learn in a brisa. But chilim iskalom nachosh. When it came to the chet eitz hadas, first the nachosh was cursed. Then chava, then adam. So working its way up from the lesser, from the less important to the more important. Well, the point is, in other words, that shows that we begin with the cotton. Now the point is, so wait. So first of all, I mean, Eitz Yosef says, look, anyway, I mean, there might be a better reason. He's the first one. He's the one who initiated the Aver. He's the first one who talked Chava into it. But the vote is that since Hashem started by speaking with Adam, when Hashem confronts them and asks, Hamin ha'etz, who does he talk to first? Adam. Then after Adam gives his excuse, then Hashem says to Chava, and she also gives her excuse, and then the Eved doesn't even ask the Nachash. She right away starts by cursing him, because the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that when it comes to a Mesis, like the Nachash was, then you don't give him an opportunity even to defend himself. Anyway, the point is, you would think, once Hashem started talking with Adam, then immediately he should continue with the punishment. So why instead Hashem first speaks to Adam and asks, what'd you do? And Adam gives his excuse, and then he speaks to Chava and she gives her excuse. And only then does he start with the punishments and starts with the Nachash. That shows it's not just because the Nachash is the one who began the whole thing. It's because he's the less important out of all the three of them. And therefore the Kalkola or the Klala begins with him first. So again, back to the question over here, then why are we putting ashes on the Nasi and the Av Beis Din first? The answer is Ho Chashivus L'Dinhu. In this case, this amounts to putting the ashes on their foreheads first is a matter of Chashivus. It shows on the contrary, D'Amri L'Hu. It means, in effect, we're telling them, Atun Chashivisu L'Miboy Alon Rachm V'Akulei Alma. You are the most worthy ones to be davening for Rachmanus, for us and for the whole world. So therefore, in other words, we're going to put the ashes on you first, showing that, in other words, you're closer to Hashem, and therefore your tefillahs are more ready to be accepted. Okay, the Gemara asks, V'heichem manach lahu. Now, when they place these ashes, what part of the head do they put them on? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak b'makom tefillin, in the place where they would put their tefillin, right above the hairline. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, losum la'avele tzion. The Navi is describing how when Mashiach comes, there's going to be given glory to those who are mourning for Tzion. Losus lahem pe'er tachas efer, where Hashem is going to give them glory instead of ashes. And the tefillin are called glory. We find in Yechezkel, when the Eibishter tells him, your wife is going to pass away and you have to do various things. We'll learn about it, Be'ez Hashem, in Masech Moed Katan, about how we learn a number of the dinim of Avelos from what Hashem tells Yechezkel to do differently. One of them, Hashem tells him, wear your pe'er, which means your tefillin, because an ovel normally doesn't wear tefillin, at least not on the first day. And the point is, when all of them ask Yechezkel, what are you doing? He's going to explain to them that this is presaging that the Korban is going to come and everybody's going to be acting this way. Anyway, the point is, the tefillin are called pe'er, and it's going to be instead of Efer, which are, of course, the exact same letters we arranged. So therefore, over here, the Efer goes in the place of the tefillin. Marsha also add the detail. In effect, what we're saying is it's as if we're saying the crown of our head, which is the Shekhinah, has fallen into the ashes. Which in fact the Gemara is going to point out soon that is precisely the reason why we bring out the Teva into the Rechoy. Well, not that, why we put Efer Mikla, why we put these ashes on the Teva, which represents Hashem's Shekhinah being there because Imo Yonechi B'Tzara. Next, Lama Yotzim L'Rechoyva. Why are they going out to the city square to daven? Rav Chiya ba'Abba Omar, Loimar, they're trying to say with that, Za'aknu b'tsina, we've cried out to Hashem in private, meaning in the Beis Mikdash, in the shul, rather, in the Beis Knesset, between the four walls of the shul, v'loi na'anenu, and we haven't been answered, nevaza atzmenu, but for Hesia, we're going to be mevaza ourselves and go out into the street in full view of everybody. In what way is that a bizoyin? One thing is, Teferis Yisrael points out, it means, in other words, like this, we're in full view of the goyim. Like this, when we're davening in the shul, they don't know that we're davening or et cetera. Now they see we're davening out in the street, and it makes them say, Hashem is not powerful enough to save you and bring rain, chas v'shalom, or whatever. So that's part of the bizoyin itself. Rish Lakish gives a different reason. Golinu. We've had to go into golus. Normally we should be in the shul. Now we're forced to go into golus from the shul. We have an experience. All of us who are sitting here have an experience 4 years ago, also going in golus in our shuls for a while. So therefore we say golus seinu mechaperes aleinu. That golus should be a kapara for us.
Four years ago,
COVID. No, we were all in golus from our shuls for a period of several couple of months. Yeah. So golus seinu mechaperes aleinu. That golus should be a kapara for us. So the Gemara asks, "My benayu, what is the practical difference between these reasons?" And the answer is, "Ikka benayu, de golu mibe knishta, mibe knishta." If they go into golus just from one shul to another, so suppose they normally daven in 7-7, let's say, and instead they're going to go and daven in whatever some other. They're going to come and daven here in Chevra Shas. That would be so. As far as golus, yes, they're going into golus from one shul to another. But as far as nevazat meinim of fahesia, they don't have that. The fact is, then, it's brought to the post can bring that both reasons are valid. If you can daven in the city square, then fine. If it's a place that it's mostly goyim and you can't because they're going to harass you or whatever, then fine. At least you do the next best and you go to a different shul to daven for this kind of thing. The fact that the Gemara is calling it over here golos, by the way, golinu, is itself a powerful thing. You know, it shows that to not be able to be in your shul where you're expected to be is a form of golos. I don't know how many people here heard at the time. There was a song that came out, A.B. Rottenberg, and I forget who else he was working with over there, came out with a song, or The Place Where We Belong, about how the Sifrei Torah and the Shul miss us Jews being there so much, because that's the place where we belong, and pleading with Hashem to help us be back there. You know, when you think about it, also,
sometimes it's a little hard for us. You know, we were talking all, you know, yesterday, we were talking about all about Golos and all about the Gola Mitzvah Shlema that we're expecting all the time. Sometimes it's a little hard for us to imagine what was it like at the time of the Churban, and therefore how badly a Yid should miss the Bais Mikdash. We had a miniature taste of it at the time. So, you know, anyway, continuing the Gemara. The Lama Mitzian as a Teva L'Rechoyva Shal'ir. Why are we taking out the Teva to the city square? Mela, in other words, Marsha says, okay, Mela, we usually daven in front of the Teva. The Teva is usually there in front of the Chazan. Fine, that's not a reason necessarily that we should be Matriach to take it outside to the street. Now, to be sure, a reason would be, because Imar Nechim Sara, but the Gemara is going to give another reason. Amr of the Shurban Levi, Loimar, Kleet Sanua Hoyalon. We had a tzniyistik keli. We had a keli that's supposed to be kept in private inside the shul. Venis baza ba'avenenu, and because of our avedas, it's being degraded and being taken out to the street. So that all of this is meant to evoke by people feelings of tshuva and feelings of a broken hardness, so that they should do tshuva, b'lev shalem, and then plead with the Eibishter to give them way. Next, v'loma miskasin basakim. Why do they cover themselves with sackcloth? Now, the Mishnah had not mentioned any such thing. The Mishnah had mentioned that they go out l'rechoy v'shal ir, and they bring out the teva and the ashes. The Mishnah had not said anything about putting on sackcloth. However, it was a Mephoshim explained, it was a given, it was a known thing that they did that by fast days. They would regularly do that, and therefore the Gemara wants to know why they would do that. It's in effect saying to Hashem, we're on the level of the animals. It means, in other words, like we've degraded ourselves and we're only on the level of the animals, and therefore Hashem have rachmanus on us, like you have on the animals, even though they don't specifically deserve it. It can mean various other things like that. What's the connection? Rashi explains, because sackcloth is made out of animal hair. A typical sackcloth would be made out of goat hair, or other mephoshim should point out, it could also be made out of like the hair of the tail of horses and then oxen and other such animals. Marsha says that's a little bit of a doichak. I mean, so we wear wool clothes also. Those also come from the wool that grows on a sheep. Rather, Marsha says the vort is that sacks are usually used to wear. So when you need to cover an animal, when you need to protect an animal from the rain or from bad weather or whatever, you don't put nice clothes on it. You put sackcloth, which is cheap cloth. The same way, then we're putting sackcloth on ourselves. Marsha also goes on to explain in some detail. Now, we learned a couple of days ago, we said that it was a common thing back in the day when people were fasting and davening for tshuva, that they would put on sackcloth. We find it by Ninveh. We said we found it by Yehuda Melech Yehud, by Yehuda Melech Yisrael. So what's the chiddush over here? The vote is, Marsha says, the sackcloth that we find them wearing in Pesukim would be, they would wear it directly on their skin. As we learned the other day, we had by when Yehuda Melech Yisrael was walking along the top of the wall over there, and he ripped his clothes when he hears what's going on in the city with the cannibalism, and they saw, they could see that the sackcloth is underneath his clothes, on the inside, between his clothes and the skin. Here we're talking about they would put sacks over their clothes. So therefore, the Gemara wants to find a different reason for it. And the reason is because to show that we're like the behemoths.
Burlap bags nowadays?
Yeah, I guess burlap or whatever. Yeah, it would be like some kind of coarse cloth that, like Rashi says, would be woven out of goat hair or other coarse material like that. Yeah. Next, v'lama noisn and efa mikla agabi teva. Why do they put burnt ashes on the teva? On the people, we understand it's an expression of avedos, but why on the teva? Amr of Yehuda ben Pazi kloimar. It means it's as much as to say, imay anoichi b'tzara, as Hashem says in the pasuk, I am with the Jewish people in their tzara. So al derech like Marshall says, just like we find Golul the Bavel, Shchinei Imam, Golul the Edim, Shchinei Imam. So the same way, when we're going into Golus, as we said, we're going out into the street, and like it's a miniature Golus. So therefore, Hashem comes along with us also, and that's represented by the Hashem's Shchina. There was represented by the Teva, and therefore we put ashes on it. Rish Lakish, Amr Rish Lakish says, you have another pasuk expresses the same point. B'chol tzarosam loy tzar, in all of their tzaris, Hashem is also pained as well. You actually have a kriyuk ksiv over there where you have the word is written in the pasuk loy with an aleph, but we read it as loy with a vav. There's not necessarily, at least in our pronunciation, an actual difference in pronunciation between the words. We showed him talk about possibilities that there may have been, but whatever the case, we understand it to mean loy. when it says loitzor, the deeper meaning of it, the kri means, in other words, Hashem is not truly at pain, because after all, I mean, the Eibishter Atzmus and Mahus is beyond anything of our world, but Hashem still makes himself as though he feels it. So Marashol also talks about over here some remozim about the vav versus the aleph over here, and connects it with lulei hamanti and the various other psukim. Anyway, the point is that both of these psukim express the point that the Eibishter is with us in our tzaris, and therefore now we put ashes on the teva in symbolism of that. Omer Reb Zeira, so Reb Zeira says, Meresh, originally, now Reb Zeira, as we know, grew up in Bavel, and he was one of the great chachamim over there, and then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. Now, in Bavel, the previous perek tells Gemara in the previous perek that tells us this kind of tainus tzibur with a full fledged tainus that's like Tisha B'Av from evening until evening, and where you can't wash and wear shoes and so on and so forth. You don't have such tainus tzibur in Bavel. The only exception that you have is Tisha B'Av. The concept of a tainus tzibur like that is only in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, said Reb Zeira, when he first came to Eretz Yisrael, he first had the experience as a mature adult of seeing one of these fasts and seeing this whole process. So he says, Meresh ki av chazinu l'hu d'rabbanan, do you have Eifer Mikra or Gabi Teva? When I first, the first time I saw them putting ashes on the Teva, Mizdazali kuli gufoi, my entire body trembled from the shock of it that they should be putting ashes on the Teva. So afterwards, it didn't bother him as much. Okay, Mefoshim say, because they explained to him what's going on. They explained to him the Ima Anochim Tzara. It may also be, though, you know, that Reb Zeira may be telling us that you have, you know, a person sees such a thing and it should cause him to tremble. It should evoke that emotion by him. Even he, Reb Zeira, the second time he saw it, was ready for something. Okay, I've seen it before. It's not something that makes it that evokes such an emotion by him. And maybe he's telling us that maybe a person should tackle work on that. It should every single time evoke the same emotion by him. And it shouldn't be like something, okay, I already saw it before.
Anything, basically, the first time you see it, it's a shock one way or the other.
That's the point. That's the point Reb Zeira is saying. That's true. Yeah. That's what Reb Zeira is saying. Yeah. By the way, Iyun Yaakov points out over here from various Mephoshim that we don't just bring out the Teva empty, we bring it out with the Sefer Torah in it. So yeah. Next, so V'loman noisnen Efer Barosh Kol Echa V'Echad, why do we put ashes on every person's head? We said we put ashes on the head of the Nasi and the Av Beis Din to represent that they're the ones who are worthy to daven on our behalf. What about everybody else? Reb Levi Bachoma v'Reb Chanina. So Reb Levi Bachoma and Reb Chanina argue what the reason for that is. One says it means that we're saying to Hashem, we're no more worthy in your eyes than ashes, like Avraham Avinu says himself, Anochi Ofer Ve'Efer. In fact, by the way, I think Ben Yehoyada points out, you know, Ofer at least you can use for something. You can make clay out of it, for example. You can plant things in it. Efer is not really useful for almost anything. Even the Gemara mentions in other places, for example, that like you can't knead Efer into a paste to make anything useful out of it. So therefore, by saying we're like Afer means like we're even more useless even than Afer before you.
Just the dust, yeah?
Afer is ashes. Afer is dust. Yeah. V'chad oma k'desh yizko l'ana efrei shol Yitzchak. The other explanation is that this way Hashem should remember for us the ashes of Yitzchak. Yitzchak, of course, was not burnt. The ram was burnt instead of him, but still the Eibishter considers it as though it was actually Yitzchak's ashes. We know the Medrash mentions, Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk, I think, that Avraham says for everything he's doing with the Ayo, he writes in that it should be considered as though I'm shechting Yitzchak, as though I'm sprinkling his blood, burning him, etc., etc., and the Eibishter Taka considers it Efresh Yitzchak Tzavur is the expression that Chazal say that consider that Yitzchak's ashes are always piled there and in Hashem's presence. So the Gemara says, "My Benayu, what's the practical difference between the two reasons?" And the reason is, "Ikka Benayu Ofer Stam." The Nafkamina would be, "What if you don't have ashes? Can you use regular? Can you use regular dust, or at least with the ashes that are not Efer Mikla?" So you're not remembering Efresh or Yitzchak, but at least you have that we're remembering fine. We're not saying we're like Efer, but at least we're saying we're like Ofer. It's something. Next, Loma Yotzim LeBeis HaKvaris. Why on a fast day did I go out to the Beis HaKvaris? Now, this is another detail that does not mention in the Mishnah. But again, this was something, it was a known thing in those times. After they did all the davening, the whole Seder of davening here on a fast day, they would go out to the Beis HaKvaris. Why? Tosfos mentions in this connection, from this developed a minhag. I don't know how many people do this nowadays, but there used to be a common minhag that on Tisha B'Av also everybody would go to the local Beis HaKvaris. So it does mention it. It mentions it in Shulchan Aruch. It mentions it even in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. It warns you have to be careful that you don't start getting in big groups over there and come to Kalos Rosh. Maybe that's why the minhag eventually fell out of use. I once read an interesting thing. There was a period of time in the between the wars, between World War I and World War II. There was a long period over there when Poland and Lithuania were basically at a cold war between them. So you couldn't easily cross the border from one to the other. There was a particular town right on the border over there where the town was in one of those countries and the Beis HaKvaris was in the other. So somehow they managed to convince the Goyisha authorities it's a must have. We must visit the Beis HaKvaris on Tisha B'Av. So and they managed to get official permission for that. So that became in that area, that became like the annual time for family reunions. People who were living on opposite sides of the border would have that one opportunity a year to meet on Tisha B'Av in the Beis HaKvaris. So why do we do that? So again, there's machlokes. One says it's to express the idea Hashem in your eyes, we're no more important than the dead. In other words, at this point, we have no schosim that you should have rachmanus on us, but because we don't even have the schos of doing mitzvahs anymore, just like a dead person can't do mitzvahs. And the other says, in order that the mason themselves should daven for rachmanus to us. Same idea as when we go to Kivrei Tzadikim and we ask them to be good to betters for us. We find all the way back with Kolev, with the Meraglim, where he goes to Moros Machpelah for that reason. Again, my benayu, what's the practical difference between the reasons? And the answer is ikka benayu kivrei ode kachavim. Can you go for that purpose to goyisha great to goyisha cemeteries? Well, the reason of yivakshu aleinu rachamim is not going to help for that. But the reason that we should realize that we're like mesim in the eyes of Hashem, that's if it's effective at least for that purpose. And again, the poskim bring for that reason, you should go to a Jewish Beis HaKvaris. But if for whatever reason you can't, then it's acceptable for this purpose to go to a goyisha one. Okay, since we're mentioning machloikasin of Rab Levi and Rab Chanina, so now the Gemara or Rab Choma but Rab Chanina, so now the Gemara brings another machloikas, which is not on the face of it, it's not directly related to the previous ones. It's just the Gemara will often do that when it brings a machloikas between when it brings a statement from an Amor or to bring other statements from him, and when it brings a machloikas between two Amoroim, especially when they're not mentioned that commonly, then it'll bring others.
Say someone should be a
good debater. What does it literally mean? A good debater means a good beggar, a good intercessor. In other words, that that person should come before Hashem and plead on our behalf. And then there's chosim, Hashem should help us. So my Har HaMoriah. Why is the mountain where the Beis Mikdash was built called Har HaMoriah? Strictly speaking, Marsha points out in Parshas Vayera, when it tells the story of the Akedah, it never calls it Har HaMoriah. It says Hashem tells him Lach Lachal Eretz HaMoriah, and then go Al Achad HaHorim on one of the mountains. But later on in Divrei Yomim, when it tells about Shlomo building the Beis Mikdash, it says he began to build it on Har HaMoriah. So they would actually names it and calls it Har HaMoriah. So why is it called that? So again, Rab Levi bar Choma and Rab Chanina have machlokes on that. One says it's so called because teaching of Torah comes out for the Jewish people from there. The Sanhedrin Gdola of 71 sits in the Lishkas HaGozis, which is located in the Beis Mikdash, and therefore, and they teach the entire Jewish people Torah, and also Rashi adds the Nevi'im who tell the Jewish people to follow Hashem also often stand there in the Beis Mikdash. We actually find in various psukim where it mentions this Navi or that Navi stood in the Beis Mikdash and spoke to everybody. So therefore, so teaching of how a Yid should act comes out from there. The other one says it's the mountain from which fear comes to the goyim, meaning Rashi says they hear about the greatness of the Jewish people in Yerushalayim and they become afraid. How could we ever start up with such people? Now Tosfos brings an interesting Rashi actually, both Rashi and Tosfos bring an in, first of all, Rashi mentioned, well, yeah, both Rashi and Tosfos mentioned an interesting idea that the Gemara may not be asking about Har HaMoriah as in the site of the Beis Mikdash. The Gemara may actually be asking about Har Sinai. That and therefore, so the Horal Yisrael, of course, would be that the Torah was given on there, and Moral over to Bechavim, because we find the Pasuk mentions the entire world was trembling until the Jewish people said Nasav and Nishma and accepted the Torah, because the entire world was where the world itself was afraid. If the Jewish people don't accept the Torah, then the world itself knows it has no reason to exist. So both Rashi and Tosfos mention this idea that that when the Gemara is speaking of here of Har Moriah, it may actually be referring to Har Sinai. In which case, why would it be called? Where do we find it's called Har Moriah? There is actually an interesting medrash that says that when Hashem was getting ready to give the Torah, Har Moriah came from Eretz Yisrael. The same way we always talk about that Har Tovah and Har Carmel came over there, and they were arguing the Torah should be given on them, and Hashem told them no because you're Bali Gaiva. But there's actually a medrash that says that Har Moriah came there and merged with Har Sinai, and the Torah was given on it. So therefore, literally, the Har Moriah, the one. Literally the one on which the Beis Hamikdash was built ended up being, was actually the one from which the Torah came to the Jewish people and from which Moriah came to the Ovid Club. So on the face of it, so Maharsha wonders how could they possibly be saying that's Har Sinai when we see that Har Moriah refers to the Beis Hamikdash, but based on that Medrash, that would be a possible answer. On the face of it, again, this particular part has no particular connection with the previous one, except it's the same Amoraim. Ben Yoyada points out there's a certain connection in the sense we just said that there might be a valid reason to visit Goyish graves on Yom HaTinus, because at least you have Yotzim and Moda L'Ovid B'Chavim. At least you have, there's a certain Moda that the Goyim have, a certain fear that they have of Hashem's presence in the world, which therefore may make it an appropriate place, if need be, to go to on a fast day if you don't have Jewish Kvarim available. Piska, we said in the mission of Azokin Shabahem Omil Fnam Divrei Chibushim. We said that the Zokin among them says to them Divrei Chibushim, which we talked about in the Mishnah, has two meanings. Hakosiv brings over here. One is that it means words that press on the heart, that tell them that inspire them to do tshuva, and the other one that kibushin comes from a word that means hidden, like Bahadi Kavshi, the Rahman Allah Malach, and therefore it means that he tells them the hidden things that they've been doing. And that they should know to do tshuva. So the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabbanan, im yesh sham zakin." If there is an old person over there, oimer zakin, then there's that zakin, that old tamen chacham should be the one who gives the speech to them. V'im lav oimer chacham. If not, then he chacham, even though he's not a zakin, should say it. V'im lav if a chacham is not available, oimer odem shol tsura, then an odem shol tsura should say it. What is odem shol tsura? There's a lot of different explanations. Rashi says that it means a person who's tall, because people look up literally and figuratively to tall people, and therefore they're more likely to listen to what he says. Rashi on the Rif, which is an alternate version of Rashi himself, didn't write on the Rif, but there's a Pirush printed under the name of Rashi on the Rif. It seems to have been compiled from Rashi and from various other Rishonim. Gives a different explanation. It means a person who is handsome. For the same reason, a person has a certain hat. Sometimes you have a person has a certain hadras upon him, and therefore that makes people more naturally pay attention. In Moed Cotton, Rashi gives yet another explanation that it means a chacham, but here Maharsha says that doesn't work because we said if he's not a chacham, then it should mean Odom Shot Surah. There's a variety of other explanations among Rishonim. Hakosiv brings over here, it can mean somebody who's a based on the Rosh. It can mean somebody who's a Talmud, but not yet of the caliber of a Chacham. So he's learning Torah, but he's not yet of the caliber of one of the great Chacham. It can also mean somebody who's Roy Lamanoisek, Parnas Alatzibur, somebody who's Roy to appoint as a leader of the community. So somebody who's a Baal Mais and Toivim and who's capable. So there's a variety of different possibilities what Odom Shot Surah means. Iyun Yaakov points out another possibility that you have the expression Pnei Hador, the face of the generation, meaning the leaders of the generation. So therefore, he can be called Odom Shol Tzura, a person who has the face that he can represent the generation. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, when we said Zokin, Otu Zokin de Kamrin Avagav de Lav Chachamu, when we said the Zokin, does it mean an old person who is not a Chacham? What do you mean? If there's a Zokin, then he says, if not, then a Chacham says, implying that, in other words, the ideal is a Zok, is Stam a Zokin, any random old person. No, what it means is, Yeshem Zokin, Vihu Chacham. If there's somebody who's both, he's old and he's a Tamil Chacham, Oima Zokin, Vihu Chacham, then he should be the one to give the speech to arouse the people to Tshuva. Ein Sham Zokin, Vihu Chacham, but if there's a Chacham there, but he's not old, Fine, Omer Chacham, then he says it even though he's young. Ein Shem Loi Zaken. Loi Chacham Omer Adam Shot Surah. And if he's neither Zaken nor Chacham, then you have an Adam Shot Surah, however we define it, and he's the one who tells them. And he continues with it, and he continues with the speech as we said it, as we said it in the Mishnah. He says, "Achenu lo sackcloth tainis gomin." He says that it's not the sackcloth and it's not the fasting that causes Hashem to listen to us. It's truva ma'isim tovim gomin. It's truva and ma'isim tovim that will cause Hashem to answer our tefillos and bring rain. Shekhen matzino ba'anshin Nineveh, as we find by the people of Nineveh, shall the name of Hashem by Yadu the Kimas sack and best tainisim. Then say that Hashem saw their sackcloth and their fast. Ela by Yadu the Kimas ma'aseim. Rather, it says that Hashem saw their deeds. Ki shovu midar kamara that they had gone back, that they had retracted from their evil ways. So he tells them, and he continues with a speech in that vein, telling them that they have to do tshuva. So now the Gemara goes into darshaning a couple of the psukim that it mentions over there in Sefer Yonah about what the people of Nineveh did. The pasuk says, "V'yiskadwin." So the pasuk describes the king of Nineveh. He was what's going on, and you have the famous medrash that he was actually Paroi, who finally learned his lesson. Anyway, so he says, "We got to take this seriously." And he announces, "Everybody had better fast, and everybody had better whatever." And he says, "V'yiskasu sakim ha'adim b'habehema." Everybody should cover themselves with sackcloth, both people and animals. So my avod or havu avdi, what were they doing with the animals? Particularly, you don't usually have animals fasting or anything like that. Osuas habehemal chud vavlodis lechud. What they did is they separated the mother animals, the parent animals from their children. They put each one they penned up each one separate. Omr lefanav, they said before Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, im ata merachem aleinu, onu merachem al elu. If you will have rachmanus on us, then we will have rachmanus on these animals and reunite them. Im einat merachem aleinu. If you're not going to have rachmanus on us, ein onu merachem al elu, then we're not going to have rachmanus on these either. Either like they're almost like blackmailing Hashem, or maybe they're even expressing a valid point in Torah, which is if people are destroyed, then there's no reason for the animals to exist either. I'll derach like by the marble. Marshall says, I mean, where do you really get that from the words v'yiskasu sakim ha'adam v'habehema? So he says that he mentions that Rashi on the pasuk over there mentions this drasha in connection with the next piece that the Gemara mentions over here when it says vayikru el kim b'chozga, they called out to Hashem very powerfully. So that was like a powerful argument that they used, and that fits better. Marshall says. Anyway, the pasuk continues, v'yikru el kim b'chozga, the king is announcing, and this is what they did, that everybody should call out very strongly to Hashem. Now, that b'chozga is an unusual expression. It's unique in Tanakh that it means that it sounds like they're gonna call out something to Hashem which is irrefutable, something which there's no way that it can be refuted, and therefore, like Hashem, so to speak, has no choice but to listen to. So what argument do they make? My omer, what do they say? Omer Ra, Omer of Shmuel, Omer Lefanav, they argued before Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam. Oluv v'she'enoi oluv, when you have an oluv, which means a person, now there's a lot of different explanations what oluv means over here, but the first explanation, Rashi explains, it means a person who's willing to be insulted, a person who's willing to accept insults and not try to get back at the other person or not try to reciprocate or whatever. V'she'enoi oluv, and the one who's not. Yochol v'she'enu yochol, when you have one who's able to do things and the other one who's not, tzaddik v'rosha, when you have a tzaddik versus a rosha, mi nidcha mipnei mi, who gets pushed away in the face of the other. Meaning, in other words, that in effect, what they're arguing is, you often find that the oluv gets pushed around by the enu oluv, the tzaddik gets pushed around by the rosha. The same way, they're saying, in other words, we are the Rishoyim, but like we should, so to speak, have the ability to push you around Hashem and to override the Gzeira, and you shouldn't destroy us. That's how Rashi explains. The Chidushim over here from the author of Ein Yaakov explains the other way around, that the Rishoyim should be pushed away because of the Tzaddikim. Meruba Midah Toiva. You Hashem, your Midah of Toiva is always greater. So therefore, you want to destroy us because we're Rishoyim. But nevertheless, after all, in every generation, inevitably, there's going to be a tzaddik. So therefore, in the schus of that tzaddik, there's got to be some tzaddik somewhere among us in Nineveh. So in his schus, we should all be saved. Right. Either way, though, Marsha points out, when you get down to it, neither one of these, whichever argument you use, whether you learn like Rashi or whether you learn like the Ein Yaakov, either way, it's not exactly an airtight argument. The fact is, the Gemara, this is the kind of thing where the Gemara elsewhere calls Ba'alila, like they're coming with an excuse almost, like if Hashem doesn't listen to them, then they're going to use that as an excuse to say that Hashem doesn't listen to Tfilis. So therefore, like Hashem is, so to speak, forced to listen, not because they have such a solid argument, but because otherwise it would cause a Chilul Hashem. So that's the B'chazka. Next, the king continues in his instructions over there to the people. Each person should do tshuva from his evil ways, and from the chomas, from the things that they took by robbery and force that is in their hand. What specifically do we mean that's in their hands? For example, even a person stole a beam. A morish is not just any beam, it's like a king beam, like you put as the central beam of a roof.
A beam, yeah.
And he built it into a building. He would tear down the entire building and return the beam to its owner. It's Bekapehem, Marshall points out, they took with their own hands and they built it into the building. So now they're undoing that by even tearing down the building if necessary.
By us Jews,
we have a tachonas chachamim, we have a tachona mipnei tikkun ha'olam. In order to make it easier for people to do tshuva, we say that no, you're not required to do that. Instead, you are koine the morish, you acquire it by the gezel and by the shinui over there, and therefore you only have to return the value of it. So you don't have to take apart the whole house. The Chachamim made that takana in order to make it easier for people to do tshuva. So one possibility is that the king is telling the people and the people are following suit that we're not going to avail ourselves of any such hetayrim. The other possibility is really when you get down to it, maybe taka, that heter only applies to Jews. Maybe it's never meant to apply to a goy in the first place. So therefore, mi'ikar adin, they would be required to do that. So they're not a Gilgal. There's a medrash that says that Pare survived Kriyas Yamsuf when all the other Mitzriim over there were killed. There's a medrash that says that he survived and he made his way to Nineveh. And now, hundreds of years later, he's still alive, according to that medrash, hundreds of years later, when Yonah came along, and when Yonah comes in and announces, Oida Boim Yom, Nineveh Ne'er Paches, then this Pare already had plenty of experience to know that that Hashem means business. And then, therefore, that's why he took it so seriously and immediately started giving orders to his people. There is, by the way, a different interesting medrash that says that maybe you can reconcile it with this one, maybe not. I don't know. But anyway, that same paroi stands by the gates of Gehenna. And every time from then on, when an anti-Semitic leader comes there and then paroi tells him, you should have learned from my example that you don't start up with the Jews. So the Gemara continues. A person, we just said that a person has to do tshuva from the chomos that's b'kapehem that's in his hand. So if a person has an avera in his hand, and he does vid, and he says vidui, but he still doesn't leave, but he doesn't go back on it, and he's still going to continue doing the avera, what is he like? Like a person who's holding a sheretz in his hand, even if he were a tova and all the waters in the world, also like tefillah, it's not going to help because he's still touching the source of tumah. As soon as he throws it out of his hand, as soon as he toivels in 40 saw of water, he doesn't even need all the water in the world. Miyad also like tevila, then right away the tevila counts and he's tovered. Shenema, as the pasuk says, moide va'oizev yerucham. When a person is moide, he says vidui and va'oizev, and he abandons the avera and stops doing it, yerucham, then Hashem will have rachmanos on him. So it has to be not just moide, but also oizev. But oimer, and we have another pasuk expressing the same idea, nista levavenu el kapoyim, let us lift up our hearts to kapayim. Now, in the first paragraph, we talked about kapayim can mean the heavens, but here the Gemara is taking it in the sense of the hands. We have to lift up our hearts together with our hands, the hands that actually did the averus, and resolve that we're not going to continue doing that. Okay, b'shamayim to Hashem in shamayim. So in other words, Marshall says, we have to throw the filth out of our hands, and therefore only then can we lift up our hearts in our hands and plead with Hashem, and then Hashem will listen to us.
Yeah, when you're washing the bread and you have your hands up like this, you know, Marshall Talay to stop you from doing
it. Also true, yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Go'ola. What is today? You're Gimel 7, thank you. Okay. the Beis Din HaGadol, the Sanhedrin Gdola of Asid Lava, is going to be greater than all the Bati Dinim of all the previous generations. It'll be greater b'chochma over minyan. The Mishnah says in the Masechta Eidos that for one Beis Din to override the Takonis and the Gzeros of a previous Beis Din, it has to be greater in chochma and in minyan. Because why in chachma? Because la'asid lava, all the Jewish people, as the Rambam says, are going to be chachamim gdolim, and obviously the ones who are chosen for the Beis Din HaGadol are going to be the elite of the elite, so greater than any of the chachamim, a previous generation. And the Rosh Hashiva, the Ab Beis Din, and the Nasi, who stands in the place of Moshe Rabbeinu, that means the Melech HaMashiach is obviously going to be greater in chachma than all the Obis Bate Din of all the Ab Beis Dins of previous generations, including even Moshe Rabbeinu. After all, we find that Mashiach is going to be teaching Torah to the Tanoim and Amoraim and even to Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, in short, that Sanhedrin will have the ability to override and to undo various Takonis and Gzeiros that Bate Dinim of previous generations have done. Okay. Halachas of Arba Rishuyos L'Shabbos. So the definition of a Rishus HaYachid is it has to be at least four by four tefachim, which is an important enough area that you can use it. It has mechitzas that are at least 10 tefachim tall. Doesn't even matter if the mechitzas completely surround it. You also have, for example, it can be a ditch, which is four by four and at least 10 deep. A ditch, a pit, a pile of dirt, any of those kinds of things. Even the Alter Rebbe also adds the point. It can even be, for example, a pile of dirt, which is not necessarily just has vertical sides. It can even be that it slopes, as long as it's a fairly steep slope. Even a keli, even a large enough keli that's sitting in Rosh HaYachid could be all of those, or Rosh HaRabim, rather, in Karmelis, all of those things are considered Rosh HaYachid. Or Rosh HaYachid goes all the way up to the sky. As far as the walls themselves, the tops of those walls are also considered parts of the Rosh HaYachid. As far as if there are holes in them that stick out, that if you have holes in the walls of them, even if the if they're open into the Rosh HaYachid, then even the entire thickness of the wall, the entire width of the hole, will still be considered Rosh HaYachid because they can be used from inside Rosh HaYachid. If they only face towards the outside, then they have different dinim, which are discussed later on.